Well, hello out there, and welcome to the Local Spotlight Show here at WJBM Studios in Jerseyville, Illinois, the voice of the Tri-Counties. And I've got my two favorite couples back in today to finish up on the second episode, Stephanie Abajay and David Stein.
Hello, hello.
Hi there.
Great to be back.
Now, the last episode, it was mainly about Stephanie, and this episode is going to be about more about Dave.
Well, we'll see. Okay.
Well, of course.
I'll be quiet. Well, as quiet-ish.
Just a little briefing. Of course, Stephanie, you grew up in Ohio and then went to D.C. and had some big-time jobs and had some big-time bars. And then all of a sudden, Dave wanders in. And next thing you know, you guys
I'm a Jersey County
love,
girl now.
Right? So, Dave, you grew up in Jersey County.
Yes, I did. Yeah. My mom's the oldest daughter of Lewis and Evelyn Stumpy from the Stumpy Dairy Farm just down in McCluskey.
Okay.
And so that's where I grew up. Most of my childhood was spent there on the dairy farm.
So you milked cows?
I did.
You know what? I noticed because, you know, like a few months ago, I had Jeremy LaPlante in here. And
yeah.
He milked cows too. And whenever you shake a hand of somebody that milks cows, you can tell.
Yeah.
Jeremy probably milked cows once or twice. But listen, I didn't milk them as much as my cousins, the Stumpy girls, they milked the cows twice a day, every day. I did anything I could to get out of that milking parlor, whether it was putting up hay or playing football or going on a field trip or just whatever I could. I did not like that job at all. And as you can see, I don't milk cows now, so I ran as far away as I could. And the farm isn't a milk farm, isn't a dairy farm anymore, so I think the rest
Thank
of us
God.
Got the same memo.
Yeah, that
was a tough way to
that
make a living.
That is a tough living, man.
I'll tell you what, it a lot of people talk about how hard they work, and unless they worked on a dairy farm, I don't believe them. It's just, I've never seen people
every
work that
day.
Hard. Oh, yeah, my uncles, my grandparents, you know, my aunts. Twice a day, every day until you die. Oh, yeah. I don't feel good today. Milk the cows. Oh, my daughter's getting married. Yeah, you got to milk the cows.
Right.
It just never ends. And so I don't want to beat a dead horse, but it's a good way to instill a work ethic, but I don't see a lot of dairy farms around anymore. There's probably a good reason for it.
So when did you graduate from Jerseyville High School?
Well, I didn't end up graduating from here. My dad is from Pennsylvania, and I ended up graduating from Selins Grove High School in 89. So I went to Jerseyville my first year of high school, but all through grade school. And then my dad moved us out to Pennsylvania in, what would that have been, 86 or 87. So I spent my sophomore through senior years in Pennsylvania, and then I went to Penn State after that for 4 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you find yourself coming back to Jersey County?
Oh, all the time. Yeah. I'd come back every summer and work and holidays and, you know, long weekends and stuff. I was back here all the time.
So Penn State, and then you went to Washington for your law degree.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's kind of a funny thing. I ended up going to law school at GW. My grandfather was the patriarch of the Stumpy Farm family, and the family farm had been in the family for three, I guess, generations or four generations at that point already. And it was always a big deal for him to kind of figure out how to use estate planning and tax planning and things like that to keep the farm together. You hear about all these farms getting broken up when the family patriarch dies. And so I was really good at school. And again, I hated milking cows. So he said, why don't you go to law school and figure all this stuff out? So I took the LSATs and did pretty well, and the best school I got into was in D.C., and so I moved to Washington, D.C. to go to law school and spent 3 years there studying trusts and estates, probate, tax planning, stuff like that.
But you didn't really like it, or what? What
well,
happened?
Well, I did.
Because you got out of it.
Yeah, I did get out of it. I tell you what, I really enjoyed the schooling part of it. When I got out and I went and got a job, I didn't enjoy working in an office. You know,
in a suit and tie.
In a suit and tie with, you know, set hours. You got to be there whether there's work to do or not. And it's just, I chafe a little bit under authority, too, if somebody, you know, thinks they're super smart. I'd like to test them out on that. And if they're your boss, they don't really appreciate that. So I only lasted a year as an attorney. But in the meantime, you know, I got some good experience and I was able to help my family with their their planning, and everything worked out great with that. But
well, let me jump in real quick.
Yeah.
He hated practicing law. He hated getting up in the morning and putting on a suit and tie, walking up the hill to the metro station, going out to Bethesda, practicing for 9 hours and coming home. He would come home from work, and we'd just gotten married. He would come home from work and he would immediately take off his suit, put on his work clothes, and go into the basement and go into the wood shop. He'd built a wood shop in the basement. He just had to have a couple hours of doing something with his hands. And so after a few months of this, I said, this isn't going to work, because he was so upset all the time. And I was like, you've got to quit your job and you've got to do the woodworking full time. And he had already started Stein Woodworking while he was in law school to make humidors and things like that. And so I think after 6 or 9 months of practicing law, you said enough is enough and quit and started woodworking full time with $90,000 in law school debt.
I mean, that's a big switch. That's tough. 1 year and then.
It is. But I'll tell you, I mean, the base of that story that Stephanie just told is with her support and with the support of my family, you know, I was able to make that switch. Not financial support so much as just like, you know, go get them.
Yeah.
You can do whatever you want.
And you made humidors. Was that good business, humidors?
It was at the beginning. I created a little niche for myself where I would come back here to Jersey County and harvest timber, and then just on a real small scale. And then I would build little humidors and coffee tables and things like that. And in Washington, D.C., that became kind of an interesting little niche of a business because everybody was using mahogany or teak or stuff from overseas. And to have a guy doing it, you know, with local materials or materials right from the United States was pretty interesting. So that's kind of how I got started. Yeah.
So, but now how did you end up, you left, you guys sold the bar businesses and the businesses and decided to come back to Jersey County.
Yeah. So I had been doing the woodworking all through law school and then started the company in law school, quit being an attorney in what would it have been, hon?
98,
I guess. And was doing woodworking full time, and people just kind of beat a path to my door in DC. There wasn't anybody doing that kind of stuff locally. You had to go out into the hinterlands to find somebody. So, I mean, when I first started my business, I would hang screen doors, I would repair furniture, I would build, you know, storm windows, whatever you needed done, I would do it. Which, you know, if anybody's built a business, they know that's what you have to do when you start out.
For sure.
And by the time we were ready to move out here, I'd say about 2001, we didn't know we were ready to move yet, but I had a pretty good clientele of designers and architects, and I was doing built-in furniture and furniture for other people's designs, as well as a real small amount of my own design furniture. So that was happening. And then Steph and I were out here, and I want to say it was 2001, you know, maybe in the late spring, early summer. And it was one of those amazing Jersey County weeks you have from time to time, which makes you just thankful that you live here, where it was, you know, 75 and no humidity in the daytime. And at night it was like 60 and you're like, why doesn't everybody live here? And so forgetting about the brutal winters and the difficult summers, we thought, you know, we had our son at that point, Oscar, and we just thought how great it would be to move back to the farm and be able to raise our son amongst all his family and how good it would be for the business. So we kind of pulled up stakes and made it happen.
Well, let's talk about David Stein Furniture.
Sure.
Okay. I mean, I've been at your shop before.
Yeah.
It's pretty wild. It's pretty cool the way you make your tables. And
yeah,
I know the tables. I don't know what else for sure you make.
Well, I think that's what we're really known for. Like I said, when I first started, we would do anything. Luckily, we've built a niche for ourselves now where I like to describe as what we build is big flat surfaces. So if it's a headboard, if it's a coffee table, if it's a dining room table, conference table,
desks,
just big flat surfaces. If you want some tricky little, you know, doohickey that has hidden drawers and compartments, that's not for me.
Right.
No kitchen cabinets, no bathroom vanities, stuff like that. We don't do repairs. What we do is we build big flat surfaces out of some of the most amazing timber in the world that comes from right here in Jersey County.
Right. But the way you do that, you know, the way you cut them. Describe how you, because
I think we're pretty fortunate. And I think probably what you're driving at is we're able to, so luckily I grew up on the farm and it's, you know, pretty good sized farm, about 1,000 acres, 800 acres or something like that. About half of it's timber. And when I was growing up, we didn't do any commercial timbering or anything like that. What we did was we took the trees that were either invasive or dead or dying or encroaching on the farmland, and then we would do a little bit of sawmilling just for fence projects, barn projects, little furniture stuff around the farm. And I really enjoyed doing that stuff. So what I do now kind of incorporates that in is I'm able to harvest the timber, and then we have a sawmill, a dry kiln, and then we have our production facility. So we do everything from manage the forest right through the final delivery of the products. So really, it's kind of an interesting, what would it be called?
Like we are vertically integrated.
It's a vertically integrated company.
We own and operate every step of the process, from growing the wood to harvesting and milling it, drying it, designing the work, crafting the work, and delivering it.
Yeah, and we do it all right here in Jersey County.
But didn't you develop, don't you have a special saw that you set up to cut those? I mean, you take a timber. How big are the logs you're working with?
Well, the bigger the better. We do really specialize in this unusual stuff.
I know.
So
that's what
giant slab.
So let's say it's a walnut conference table that's 50 inches wide and maybe 16 feet long, and it's made out of a single slab of walnut lumber. That's our kind of a thing. And I didn't develop any saw, but we have a Lucas mill that we use, and then we use various other kind of double-ended chainsaw mills and things like that, just so we can get the width that we need.
And you cut them you slice them.
Yeah.
Right?
You basically, if you can imagine, if you had a can of Coke sitting on your table and you laid it down on its side, that's a log now laying down on the ground. You just slice it through and through parallel with the ground at 3 inches thick. And then you end up with 9 or 10 slabs, the middle 4 or 5, which are big enough for single slab tables. And that's the real kind of our bread and butter, and what we're really known for is that sort of work, the live edge work. And then we also do, you know, multiple board tables too, but the live edge single slab,
that's our signature.
Knock
work.
Your socks off. Yeah, that's our thing.
Yeah, and all beautiful. Of those pieces are, you know, Dave said you can get maybe 8 or 9 slabs out of a log. So when those slabs are gone, they're gone. So there's only 8 signed and numbered pieces from that tree.
Yeah.
And then once that's gone, that's not available to anybody else anymore. That's what makes it so special and so singular.
Yeah.
Is that it's all just one of a kind.
And we're real fortunate too. So I've been doing this my whole life. And so I've got stacks and stacks of lumber in my drying sheds that are all photographed, numbered, and
cataloged
with the sizes. So Chris Lorton calls and says, listen, man, we just bought WJBM. We're going to need some conference tables in here.
Yeah.
And listen, money's no object, right? And so I'm saying, first of all, I say, Chris, you're my kind of guy. Yes. Second of all, I can pull, let's say you like walnut and you like local Jersey County stuff. I'll pull 4 or 5 slabs from our stock of slabs in our database, send you photographs, or you can come to the shop and visit and design a table just for you from stuff that you've picked out and we've handled every step of the way. And a real good example of that is we just built a live edge table in the jury room at the Jersey County Courthouse out of Cherry.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's 14 feet long.
14 feet long and about 40 inches wide, and it's just beautiful, and everything in it's right here from the county.
Hey, if you're just joining us, I have Dave Stein and Stephanie Abajay, and we're talking about David Stein's furniture and a little bit about Stephanie.
Well.
Is she? But we're on Dave right now.
Yeah.
David Stein's furniture. Now, you took a trip recently. Tell us about, you took a trip and...
Oh, overseas?
Yeah.
A sabbatical.
Tell me about that.
Well, another Jersey County tie-in. So my grandparents were always big community supporters, and they were real big in 4-H and in FFA. And they worked with the University of Illinois Extension Service for years, and they would always have exchange families or exchange students every year. One of the families that came over was a young couple from Finland back in the 80s, and they stayed, it was the 70s, and they stayed for like a year or 18 months. And a lot of people here around the county probably still remember Hanno and Sirka Antila from Finland. Well, make a long story short, our families became really good friends. So our family members have visited their farm in Finland, and their family members have come over and stayed and visited our farm in Illinois.
For 50 years, these families.
For 50
families
years,
have been...
we've maintained this great friendship. So
3 generations of the families.
Yeah. In 2022, the Antila family farm was celebrating
its 450th anniversary.
All right, I always get confused about this because the patriarch of that family, Hanno, is like, listen, it's been 750 years, but the church burned down, you know, 500 years ago, so that's as far as we know. But either way, old family property over there. Really cool. So they invited us over for their big wingding that they had for their anniversary. I took the whole family and some other family members of ours went over and just had a great time. Well, moving forward, they had a fire and their family home burned down at Christmas time that year. And nobody was hurt, no big deal, you know, just unfortunate. So I had this great idea. They've all been over here. We've all been over there. I'm going to ship over a whole log's worth of walnut lumber, and we're going to build a new table for your new family home that kind of celebrates our friendship, you know, through the years. So that was the whole idea for this trip I took last year. So I went over there for 4 weeks, and I would work. The youngest guy in that family, his name is Thomas, and he's a woodworker also. And he was really interested when he visited my shop. I'm really interested to visit his shop. So I went over there. Everything they do in their shop is like CNC routers and computers, and like it looks like a laboratory over there.
Okay.
And everything I do is pretty low tech.
You know, it's a lot of old school.
I'm old school. There's a lot of handwork. You know, if you can't fix it with a sledgehammer, it's probably not in my shop. So I went over there and I shipped over this crate of stuff. And well, to make a long story short, I had a heck of a good time working with him and then traveling around. And the crate of materials that I sent, it arrived the week after I came home. So,
oh, my God.
It got caught in customs, and it was just one of those things. So Steph and I are going back this year, and we're going to get that table built one way or the other. Because the crate's there now, at least. But that's what I was doing over there. And just it was kind of a sabbatical, kind of continuing education, super fun as well, but learning how people do things in other parts of the country, getting design ideas from other parts of the world, and just, you know, really kind of expanding my knowledge of other ways of woodworking. So that was the whole idea of it.
So who do you sell your products to? Who's your main market?
Well, I think it's 50-50 businesses and individuals. And then you break that down, and Steph actually has just done a big breakdown on this. She'll know exactly how.
Yeah,
it is.
60% of our sales are to the trade, which means to a designer, an architect, a design firm, builder, something like that. And then 40% is direct to the public. But of the sales to the trade, it's 50-50 between commercial work, which means office furniture, restaurant furniture, or to a residence. So most of what we sell is residential furniture, dining tables, desks, things like that.
But you sell all over.
Oh, we sell all over the world.
Yeah.
All over the world.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny, when we started the business in DC, it was a little different. But when we moved back here to the Midwest, we came up with a marketing plan where we were going to divide the country into four pieces and figure out where to sell furniture. So back then it was pre-Instagram, Facebook wasn't very big, and, you know, we didn't do any internet marketing. So we took the first year and we concentrated on the East Coast, and we did furniture shows, you know, physical, load up the truck and head out east for 3 weeks.
The Architectural Digest show, the International Design Fair.
Yeah, I kind of knew that.
Yeah, we did that, and then we figured out which two shows there were going to work. And then we did the Midwest, which two shows there. And then, you know, sort of the mountain states, and then the West Coast. So in 4 years, we had developed a group of shows of like 6 or 8
shows. Who were going to these
shows?
What kind of people?
Buyers.
Yeah, I mean, mostly
designers,
buyers.
Architects. Like at the Architectural Design Show, you get a lot of architects, a lot of designers.
Yeah, and you get some members of the public as well.
But people go to these shows because they are there to buy furniture. They're there to see what the products are.
And they're wanting something different.
Oh, yeah, always.
They want something special.
Yeah, they want you to, you know, you have to sell yourself. When I first started my business, this is, you know, a good marketing example, I think. I just figured people would come to me because I'm amazing, right?
Yeah, right.
You can be as amazing as you want if you sit in the corner and don't say anything to anybody. Nobody knows. So, you know, we do a lot of stuff like we're doing right now. You get out there and you tell your story, and hopefully you find some people that have the like-minded and are interested in what you do. And that's what we did at shows. So,
and we were green and sustainable well before those became buzzwords in the industry.
Yeah.
You know, Dave's always sustainably harvested the wood. We've always been a sustainable company. And now it's just people expect that.
Yeah.
But we've been that way for 25 years.
Yeah, that's the way I was raised. On the farm, you know, we didn't waste stuff. We always used everything. And my grandfather's big motto was, you know, take what you need from the land and leave the rest for the next guy, and there'll always be plenty for everybody.
So on your farm, and all the wood, everything you get is coming off your farm. Right.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah. We've gotten to do a bigger volume of furniture than I can harvest right now. So we maybe buy 10% of our timber, but it's also from local places. You know, okay. I don't go buy single logs from people or whatever. If I need to, let's say for example, you know, I have a big job. We just did a job for a big barbecue restaurant in St. Louis, and it needed a little bit more white oak than I had dry and on hand. So I just traded with another guy who's north of here a ways, and you know, it's all still local stuff, but for the most part, probably 90%, maybe even a little bit more of the wood that we use in our work comes right off of my family's land here in Jersey County, or from neighbors who, you know, a big tree fell down. They hate to see it just get pushed into the ditch, so they'll give me a call. Yeah.
Great. Any words of wisdom? Believe it or not, we're out of time again.
Darn it.
No.
I just love the sound of my own voice, Chris. What can I tell you?
Anything you want to add, how people can get a hold of you,
sure.
If they want something.
Well, we have a big account on Instagram. That's always fun to watch. So it's at David Stein Furniture. Our website is Stein Woodworking. It's STINE woodworking.com. And then, you know, we're on Facebook as well. So we're pretty easy to find.
And we have a showroom next to the Tricone Antique Club on Route 3.
Yep.
Available by appointment only. So if you want to pop in and see our work,
yeah.
Give us a buzz.
Just give us
make
a ring
an
and be happy to give you a tour of the shop.
Well, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
This was great.
It's been enjoyable. And we will see you out there in the streets of Jerseyville.
Absolutely.
Take care.
All right.
Thanks.
Thanks.